Well, if you've got a computer, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at what Sean has posted. It is the video that went with the audio that I played earlier tonight, that ghost girl, the spooky ghost footage filmed in a graveyard. It is in Spanish, but take a look at the video if you would like. It's on the coasttocoastam.com website. And when I come back, the rest of your phone calls, and then at the end of the program, my interview with Larry Haber, the attorney representing the family of alleged time traveler John Teeter. And back to the phones we go. We'll pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
George?
Yes, sir.
I'm on?
Yes.
Oh, thank you so very much.
You made it.
I did. Once again, this is my third time being able to speak with you, my good friend, and I am so appreciative of it.
You have a good track record going.
Well, it's also because of persistence and determination.
You've bought Tommy off.
If you have both of those, it will work for you.
How much cash did you offer Tommy?
As many times as I have.
I need to know this. How much cash have you offered Tommy to get on?
No, not at all. None whatsoever. Positively, absolutely. I've been doing it for an hour, but I already know what it takes to be able to make it to the presence that we have here before us.
You have done it.
And I would like to comment something for you, George.
Okay.
Okay, it's for all of us that are in that 89%. That no one understands from your heart, dear George, for what it is all about in the bigger sense, in the bigger picture. We are all devils and we are all saints. All right? We don't need to know anything about that particular point that we don't already. And all we're going to do is look at it from a particular point that a lot of us are not going to understand. But rather to get in all of that, it's about the children. And the children that are there that are just grasping all of this before us, because if we were to be coming in right now, look at all that we would have to take in before us. It's enough. So every time that you go ahead and give in to those little things that you know within your own spirit that says, we're going too far, we're pushing this envelope, then what's next after that?
That guy, by the way, was creepy.
Yeah, he was creepy, because why, George? It's in all of us. We are all creepy. We are all good, one way or the other.
So you applaud that decision not to go ahead with it?
Oh, very much so. Because you know within yourself, George, if that's already telling you and you give it and pass the buck to somebody else, no, I don't want to do it, let somebody else do it. Well, it's all going to come back to us because that's what it's all about out there. And we who have been avid Coast listeners know for so many years out there that we're all looking for the same thing, the truth to be told to us so that we know that it is the truth and not a lie. We all live in lies, and that's what we're finding out now. We don't need lies anymore.
Good point.
So with all of that, you know, we are just representing those that want to know that it is out there for us to continue.
How do you feel about me simply letting the channeler say what he's going
to
say?
Well, whoever else wants to get into that, that's going to be for those listeners.
That's his thing.
Because we have to both represent both sides, of course. You know, that's what's out there.
And by the way,
we can't be all goody-goody without knowing realistically we're evil people, all of us together.
I'm not even going to be with him. So, you know, they're going to turn on a tape recorder, let him announce who he is and what he wants to do.
It has to be that way to give it in. But also to understand, though, those children that are out there that are listening, as it would be me.
And there are many. There are many.
They are many. And that's up to us as responsible adults now to look and understand, hey, do you want that crap to continue to go on within your own life and in your own children's life and your children's children's life? Well, you keep on thinking like that. You keep on doing that. That's what's going
to
happen.
Not to say that the devil isn't real.
Oh, of course he's real. How could he not be? I mean, it's created every day when you look at all of the horrible stuff that goes on out there, just as well as the good Lord is, too, with all of the spirit that continues to keep us alive and thinking in a positive and knowing on a better sense why this all has to be so we can get by all of this.
Is the devil winning the battle?
There's no such thing as winning or losing. It's the way it is.
Interesting.
It always has been and it always will be.
All right. Thanks for your call. Appreciate you being on the program. Next up, let's go to our creepy hotline. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing tonight?
Good.
My name's Jason, and I'm calling you from the peak of Ohio, Buff Mountain.
Hey, Jason, what's on your mind?
All right, I had a buddy who used to live in a house in our town here, and we had a couple strange incidents. He used to have a dream where he had a lady that was giving him dance lessons, and he'd never known this dance before and then was asking around about it, and it turned out to be a real type of dance. Did some research and found out that two people died in his home that he was living in. And the lady who used to live there was a dance teacher. And it just so happened that that was the type of dance she was teaching.
I'm sure it was an unusual type of dance. What do you know? What kind it was? Like the imperial or something?
Some type of ballroom.
Yeah, ballroom dancing. Sure.
And we were sitting in his bedroom one night. No draft in this room whatsoever. Completely airtight almost. And we were just sitting there watching TV, normal night. And his bedroom closet was about an inch open. And this door, you had to turn the handle, the latch it, and pull it shut. And it just shut by itself. And we're sitting there, and I looked at him, and he said, "Don't say nothing, just keep watching TV."
He was pretty familiar with this one, huh?
Yes, it had happened to him before a couple times. His TV would turn on and off occasionally, and in the middle of the night, he'd wake up, and his TV would be on, and it had been off when he went to bed, and different things like that. And the other incidents was me, him, and his stepson were in the bedroom one night, and we got done watching a TV program. His stepson left the room. I was just short behind him, and he shut the door ahead of me. And I turned around to talk to his stepdad to say something to him and was trying to turn the handle to pull it open, and the door wouldn't open like he was on the other side turning it or holding it shut. Well, I let go of the handle, and a few seconds later, tried to open the door, and it opened, and he's standing halfway down the stairs looking up at me, asking me what I was doing. And I was asking him, well, I thought he was pulling on the door, and we couldn't figure out what was going on. And the only thing we could come to was something was holding that door shut.
Somebody was. Somebody didn't want you to open it. Thanks for the call. Next up, Wild Card Line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Angelique. Hi, George.
Hi.
I have been speaking to you before about my inventor brother who worked with the Russian scientists.
Yes, I remember that.
Yes, okay. Well, when he died, when he was found dead, we went to the funeral. And, he was my playmate. And then I visited my half-sister in Germany. And she said, oh, my God, I wanted to phone home to America. And then she said, no, you can't because the phone is broken. And I was trying to show off, because my brother was this inventor and with electronics and everything.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, no, that's nothing. I can fix that. So I said, bring me some tool, a screwdriver and a few things, And so I had great faith, that I would know how to fix it. So anyway, just as I was trying to fix the cable, with how do you call this tape? The tape that you run.
The electrical tape?
Thank you. The electrical tape. Just as I was going to put those two wires together, I heard this big laugh inside my head, which was my brother. And he used to tease me, and always when I was a small child and we played together, he always invented little toys with electricity. And he always said, hold this cable for me. And I always was good-hearted and held the cables for him. And very often I got electrocuted. And I was always very scared.
Now, I hope he wasn't giving you the full current.
Now, what happened is this. This is humor beyond the grave. Just as I showed off to my sister, because, I'm a little bit practical, I was just trying to mute those two cables together. I heard my brother laugh in my head, like, ha, 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 like he used to do when he was a small child. And then all of a sudden I said, did you stop the electricity? It was a live wire. And I could have really been electrocuted big time. And so my sister said, no, no, my half-sister, it is alive, no. And it saved me from really being heavily electrocuted. But, my brother proved to me that there is life after death, because he was very humorous. But the funny part is when we were in the funeral in Munich, tried to put the casket into the grave,
Yeah.
It was 5 inches too short, the grave. And the casket didn't fit in. He was only 34 years when he was found dead. And we all laughed in the funeral, We laughed because we all thought it was strange, that he probably didn't want to live this life,
He fought it as long as he could, huh?
Yeah. But anyway, he was really terrific. Remember, he was found dead, and he was the first one who did all the solar energy with elevators and motorcycles and I told you that story.
He would have been a great scientist if he had stayed alive.
We still have videos from him. He was famous everywhere in Germany many years ago.
He was 34. How old are you now?
Me?
Yeah, you sound young.
Yeah. What? Well, anyway.
37.
I'm many lives old. But what I wanted to tell you...
You know, you won't tell me, will you?
No, it's okay. It's okay.
I'm just trying to guess because of your voice. I'm trying to guess your age.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. I saw you finally in the video.
Give me the first number.
Well, I am past... I am sort of already 41.
Oh, see, I was close.
But, you know, I'm very, very happy. But... the thing about my brother, we all have very strong dream recall because, you know, I realized that we have parallel lives. And remember I told you about the Pope that came into the dream class? I told you about Pope John Paul with the pink towel. I did tell you that.
Yes, you did.
And I couldn't understand why he came to me and passed me this pink towel with embroidery. And he said, June and Munich. Remember I told you that. But guess what? The next pope was from Munich, and he was coronated around June.
That's a good point.
So, you know, it's just interesting because, you know, I understand that we have... And I told you also about many people who drowned, and I was trained in a dream state, which is not to me dream state, that when the people die suddenly, that they are just don't realize that they passed on. Remember, I told you that too.
How do you like living in the United States now?
I love America. I adore America. And I want to say hi to all the wonderful family that I think I'm part of because I lived in for many years. In fact, Art Bell has paintings from me. I'm an artist. I teach the old masters in Paris.
How come I don't have any paintings?
What?
I don't have any
paintings. I sent one year ago to you and Tom.
Tom probably took it.
No, or I can send them again, different ones, if you want me
to. Sure. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you for letting me.
How do you say bye in German?
I'm from Austria. What?
How do you say bye in your language?
Auf Wiedersehen.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Tom. Tom from Arizona right now.
Sounds like you're trucking along, Thomas.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I was calling in response to your decision to not do the interview.
Yes.
If there were perhaps questions that you were curious about, I would be willing to put myself in front of the gentleman and ask any questions that were out there for
you. You would take the front line for me.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, thing is, at 8 years old, I was hit by a car, and I was dead for just under 7 minutes. Faced with mortality at a very, very young age, I've throughout my entire life had an incredible curiosity with what happens, what's out there, and everything like that. And honestly, I don't fear any of it.
How many lives do you think you've eaten up? You know, we're entitled to, I always say nine, like a cat.
I don't know. You know, I used to really be into extreme sports, dirt biking, rock climbing, and things like that. I've probably used up quite a few of my chances.
Yeah, I think I've used up three of my nine.
Well, I know for sure the one where I was hit by a car. I was hit by a car when a lady was yelling at her kids and not paying attention. And
rammed right in you. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you're lucky to be here. Okay, well, you know what? Let's take your number.
Okay.
Hold on. Tom, get his number just in case we put him in the front lines. I'm not sure I'm going to do that, nor am I sure the network would permit me to for obvious reasons. Let's go to our creepy hotline. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yeah.
This is Kathleen from St. Louis.
Hi, Kathleen.
I just wanted to tell you that I grew up in a house that I'd found out later that was on the Underground Railroad. On M Station Road on the Illinois Bluff.
Oh, yeah.
I watched the arch being built from the top of my barn.
That was in, what was that? What year was that? 63?
Well,
Or 67.
Actually in the time capsule, I would think it was 66 when they finally finished it.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Anyway, my brother used to like to throw me into the closet and shut the door. Well, you know, he had this way, but my father literally became Jack Nicholson in The Shining. I mean, he did unspeakable things. And what was so frightening is that he kind of had that tendency before, but when we moved up on this farm, it was really frightening. It was once like a huge mansion, and the original part was all log, and then they did brick all around it.
What did he do? He tormented you?
Well,
you don't even want to go there, do you?
Please.
Okay,
yeah, well,
let's, okay.
Anyway, our sixth grade teacher was murdered. That was in 1966. And someone got an Ouija board for Christmas. We decided to see who murdered our teacher.
Oh, my God.
And the boy that was with us was the funeral director's son.
Okay.
And I don't know whether he was pushing it or not. We kind of felt like he was kind of doing that. But
after that,
really, really, really bizarre things started happening, really frightening. And in the one closet, you could crawl across the staircase and get into a room that you couldn't tell was there in that other room.
Did the Ouija board ever say who killed the teacher?
Yes, her husband. The glass was
broken. He ever get convicted?
No.
He did not. And he's still out there somewhere.
Yeah, or possibly dead by now.
Maybe he died, yeah.
But anyway, she liked to beat me a lot in school, so I feel bad for her. But I seen the face of evil, and at the same time that my friend called me and said that something was jumping on his waterbed. We were doing these seances in the old house. And we had one yellow cord that, you know, those orange cords, the electrical cords
yeah.
My dad had built a
sure.
newer house.
Those long ones, those.
Yes. He built a newer house close by. We pulled the orange cord through, and he was a genius. He was in the small kitchen. No one knew that it was there. And we would charge $1 a head, and we made like $300 one night.
$300?
Yeah.
Charging kids to come in and look?
Yeah, high school kids.
That's amazing.
And we would hide all the wires underneath the tall moldings, and we had speakers everywhere. Well, this night, I was always supposed to act like I was possessed and that, you know, something would speak through me. And suddenly, everything happened completely differently than it had the other nights. And I was really kind of thinking Mark must have a different tape in or something like that. And he comes out of the kitchen, and I'm like, what, you know, what's he doing out here? And he comes over, and he says, you've got to stop. And he actually had to kind of shake me.
You were really possessed.
He was actually floating across the room to me. And he's passed away now, and that's the way I've seen him in my dream when I had.
You guys dabbled with the supernatural way too much. You know that.
Yes, that's why I'm saying that I had a dream the night of the calcium bomb. I knew that was the answer for me. I have seven of the diseases that are chronic.
Oh, my God. Have you gone on that program yet?
Pardon me?
Have you gone on that program yet?
I can't find a doctor.
Where are you?
I'm in St. Louis, and I was hoping maybe.
Oh, there is a doctor there. I'll tell you what, if you've got a computer.
Yes.
Go on a website and search for NanoBac. It's a company, NanoBac.
Life Sciences.
Yeah, and just call them. They'll help you out.
Well, everyone that I called, they only will do the chelation thing.
Well, yeah. Well, that's good enough. That's a good start. No. They won't do it through the vein. They'll do it with the other system. Yeah. Call NanoBac and get the names of some St. Louis doctors, and they'll help you out. We'll be back in a moment. And don't forget, toward the end of the show, the interview with the attorney representing the family of John Teeter, time traveler. And we'll be back. We'll continue to take a few of your phone calls. Then we'll wrap up this hour with the interview with the alleged attorney. Well, the attorney's real, but the attorney for the alleged time traveler family, John Teeter. We'll be back in a moment. And when you hear the interview with Larry Haber, the attorney, we did shorten portions of it because I would interview Larry, the attorney, and then there was a portion there, and you'll hear that, where I interviewed the mother of John Teeter through Larry, And what we edited out was my question to Larry's, Larry's questions to the mother, to tighten it up a little bit so we save some time. But you'll be hearing that very shortly. And a lot of information in it. And it will. And I'll tell you what's so surprising about this. The fact that there's an attorney involved, and you'll hear his story. I mean, this is fascinating stuff. And I'll let it play first. We'll have a few seconds after it's done for me to wrap things up. And I will probably play it again sometime next week for those of you who are going to bed, or you're fading out right now. But I will do that, and maybe even make it available on the website. I'll check with Sean and Lex to see if that's possible. But we'll be doing that right around the corner very shortly. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Good evening, George.
Yes, sir.
Pleasure to hear your voice.
Likewise. Thanks for holding so long.
You're quite welcome. I would like to pose this as a warning to anybody who wants to dabble rashly with the paranormal. The creepiest place I've ever been in my life was a beautiful, charming little city in Germany called Butzbach. And Butzbach is over 400 years old, and they have a tradition there of witches. And as a matter of fact, outside the Kaserne, which is the military compound where I was stationed, across the street behind one of these beer stoves that surrounds the little compound, in a vacant lot was a like a 20, 25-foot tall, round, conical-shaped tower with the top cut off of it. And it had a little like, 4-foot-tall door in it, and you could go in there, and it was maintained perfectly. And there was a dungeon in the floor, and the story of this was that in the old days when they believed in witches, they would take a supposed witch in there, throw them in the dungeon, close the grate, and lock that door and wait until they died.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Yes, and when their spirit departed their body, the purpose of the tower was the spirit would go shooting up the top of the tower, and it would have so much projectile force that it couldn't come back down to possess anybody.
At least they hoped it could.
Yes, they hoped. But anyway, the town is built around a pretty good-sized hill, and the top of the hill still was forested with a delightful little forest. And it was the habit of the soldiers, as a tradition, to go up when they're getting short time, to go up on that hill and drink a bottle of wine. And so when I was in my short time status, I did this with a friend of mine, and we went up there, and we were discussing, there was an elderly lady who, an elderly German lady who hung out in these beer stoves, and she would drink and get a little nose full, and then she'd come out and she'd be singing these little songs, and we called her Butzbach Annie. And so my friend and I are up there drinking our wine, and we'd finished our wine, and it was a beautiful fall afternoon, and we were in a little glade, and the trees, the leaves were drying and yellow, and it was just a lovely day. And my friend and I started talking about Butzbach Annie, and he looks at me and he says, you know, Butzbach Annie's a witch. Well, I grew up in a Christian tradition that denied the existence of such things. And so anyway, I said, oh, yeah, right. And I was a little bit tipsy, and yeah. I grabbed a stick, and I drew a circle, and I drew a pentagram in it and stood in there with my empty wine bottle just dancing around, going ooga-booga, 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 just acting silly. And so I stopped for a minute to try to think something else foolish to say, and it was a dead calm day. You got to understand this. There was no wind or anything. And when I stopped, suddenly, the leaves on the trees over my head all shimmered and shook, and my hair went straight up. And I looked over to my friend who was sitting on a large rock, and his eyes were like the size of saucers. And he says, I heard it, and I saw it. So we just got the heck out of there. But that's not the end of the story. I got stationed on the gate because my replacement came in, and that was the habit, you know, they'd give you gate guard duty until your time was up and you went home.
Right.
So I'm at the gate, and this beautiful young German woman comes up, and she's asking for a friend of mine whom I knew had gone to Amsterdam for the weekend. So I said, well, honey, he's gone for the weekend. And she said, well, I wanted to have a date. And I said, well, you can have a date with me. I get off at 6 this afternoon. So she said, sure. And so she came back, and we went out, and we had some wine together and had a nice evening, and we made an appointment for Sunday afternoon when I was off.
Okay.
And so Sunday afternoon she comes, and we take this blanket, and we go up to the top of that same hill, and we put the blanket in the sun, and we had a picnic, and we made love. And it was just a delightful experience, and I left because I was going, I had her take me back down because I was going back on duty at 6. And so I run into the barracks, and it's like 5:30, and I'm getting dressed and putting on my fatigues and everything really fast, and there's a window on the back of this room that's on this on this little alley where this beer stoop is. And I hear Boosbach Annie come out of a bar, and she's wandering down the street singing a song. I couldn't see her, but I stuck my face up to these bars because they didn't want anybody coming in or going out.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Hexa, Hexa. And that means, you know, witch in German.
Yeah.
And she stops her little song, and it's dead quiet for about 5 seconds. And then she says, ja, ich bin ein Hexa. And that means in German, yeah, I'm a witch. And then she switched to English, and she said, you think you're really smart, what you did with that girl up on the hill today.
Oh.
But you stay away from her. Now, this hill was 3 miles away. And you stay away from, you're bad for that girl. And I got a chill because what the girl had told me after the experience was that she was married. And I would not have considered making love to this child if she were married. Because in those days, I didn't do
right.
those things. Now, here's the warning. Later, 15, 20 years later, I'm telling a friend about this. And he said, when you got out of that circle, there was a demon on your shoulder. And it's still there. And let me tell you what, that affected me for the next 30 years of my life. Mm-hmm. I had two marriages that were broken up because I became an adulterer. And it was only after I lost my second marriage, went down on my knees and begged for forgiveness, that this curse was lifted.
And was
it? Excuse me?
Was it lifted?
Well, I'm alone now. And I have no woman in my life. And I suppose this is the price you pay. And so let me warn anyone, especially you young people who are rash and don't believe in symbolisms of pentagrams and don't believe in witches and goblins and demons. They live, and you must avoid them at all costs.
What a story. What a story indeed. Well, I'm going to tell you a story right now. His name was John Teeter. He was a supposed time traveler from the year 2036. He started posting online several years ago. Where is he now? Nobody knows. Some of the things he posted were uncanny. He talked about world events. He talked about civil war. He talked about mad cow disease. He talked about the Olympics, said that we have a final Olympic in 2004. That didn't happen, but that is up for debate. He talked about some incredible things that would happen in science. He came back because he needed an old IBM 5100 computer. He needed the parts. And then he vanished. His family was living in Florida at the time. They have since moved to the Midwest. And through all this very bizarre occurrences, somehow they have found an attorney to represent them. There is a book out there, apparently written by John Teeter's mother, Kay. The attorney I talked to, his name is Larry Haber. He is an attorney down in Florida. We have checked them out. You will hear his story. You will hear his relationship about John Teeter. And you will hear him talking to Kay, and then he responds back with the answers. Here now is our exclusive interview with Larry Haber, the attorney for the family of alleged time traveler John Teeter. Larry, can you tell us, first of all, your association with either John Teeter, the time traveler, or the family?
I was contacted by a friend of mine from law school a few years ago and said that he was looking for somebody that did some entertainment law work, which I do, and then explained to me the story that is probably pretty well known to the people that are listening right now. And I said, well, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, and I don't believe it. He said, no, I'll give it a try. I really need some help with this thing. So I went ahead and took the couple of calls and have been involved with it for the last 3 years now.
Are you baffled, perplexed? It is indeed a strange story, is it not?
Baffled, perplexed, and everything in between, sure. I have no idea if any of this is real or not, or true or not. I know that they believe it's real. The few times I've had direct contact with the family, and the many times I've had it through my friend, have led me to believe that these guys really think that everything they keep talking about is absolutely real. But I'm too far removed from it to really get a good handle on it.
Larry, have you met anybody face to face?
No, okay. I have not, except for my friend, who I haven't seen him in years, so. I know the person that has made the contact with me, but not anybody from the family. Just a couple of phone conversations with John's mom, Kay, and that's all I've had.
Okay, but you still represent them, I assume.
I represent them, that's correct.
Okay, now I understand you have Kay on another line. She does not want to come on the program directly with her voice, but she will answer questions through you. So let me first of all ask you if Kay saw a John Teeter from the future John Teeter.
Okay, let me ask.
Has Kay seen John Teeter from the future?
She's telling me that when he left in March of 2001, she hasn't seen the older version of him since then.
Since then?
Correct.
Is there a smaller version of John Teeter? And if so, how old is he right now?
There is, and he's about to turn 8 years old.
About to turn 8 years old. Has the 8-year-old John Teeter met the adult John Teeter from the future?
I'm glad I'm asking her that. I couldn't answer any of these things. Hold on. They were together for the 3 years when John was here. The future John was here in the past, I should say. It gets a little confusing.
Did her future son talk to her at all about the family, how long they would live, or anything personal like that?
Kay was pretty insistent that she said that at the time she said, absolutely not, I don't want to know any details of the future, because she was just spooked her. So as far as I can tell from her right now, they have no idea about anything that took place in the future or will take place in the future.
Larry, how did she first come about and meet the John Teeter from the future? How did that all occur for her?
In April of 98, he visited them in Florida and stayed for a couple of months and came back in June and spent the next 3 years with them, but knew how to find him because obviously he knew where he was living back then.
Why did she believe this individual who would probably show up at their doorstep and say, "Hi, Mom, I'm John Teeter.
I'm John, right.
Yeah.
Good one, because, again, that's the biggest one for me to try to figure out. Hold on. Good question. She says the first meeting she knew it was him, but it took her about a day to really accept it or figure it out that it was real, or that it had, that it really could be real. I don't think she still was convinced that quickly, but she's telling me I'm trying to repeat the words. How can a mother not know her son, basically?
Even if he's much older.
Right, right.
Was she proud of him?
Basically terrified.
Terrified of him? Why?
Terrified. I think it's for the same reason, not wanting to be on the phone now or get more involved than this way. Just when you get hit with something like that, she said, basically, I'm not that sophisticated a person, and to get hit with something like that, it was, why would my son come back? What's wrong in the future? What's going to happen to us? What's going to happen to everybody? And so on. So it took her a while to get over the fear, very afraid, very fearful, almost terrified, I think, from given the way her voice sounds.
Is she pretty well convinced that John went back to his own time era, or has he moved on to other time periods?
She doesn't personally believe he went anywhere else. He really didn't enjoy what he went to do the first time around, and she thinks that he probably would have stayed and not accepted going taking another assignment.
Okay, so if I understand you, she thinks that John Teeter from the future is still here in our time period.
No, is in his current time frame in the future.
She went back.
Didn't
then.
Do any more time traveling, right?
Okay.
And that's part of the reason why he probably hasn't been back here.
Understand. There is a book that is being sold now. It's called John Teeter, A Time Traveler's Tale. It's a paperback. It's by John Teeter. I assume is written by the mother. Do you, Larry, as the attorney, have anything to do with that? Do you represent them on that at all?
Just in terms of getting the publishing, I mean, I can tell you that all I was responsible for was to make sure that the copyrights were filed right, and the thing's really incidental to it, but had no other involvement with the book itself.
Self-published, or is there a big publisher behind it?
Self-published.
Okay. Is there anything else on the horizon with regards to this John Teeter story that you know of?
Well, I am aware of a movie. Kay had hired me, or actually continued to hire me, but asked me to about a year ago to take a look at making some type of video or film about the story, so that it would be more widely known than just what's out there now. And so because I do entertainment work, I'm in Orlando and do work with a lot of video companies. One of those companies is working on a film. I have no idea what stage they're at. They told me that they've spent some time with some phone interviews, and they were going to put something together for release this year, but I haven't seen anything or really don't know much more about it other than that.
I'm sure the family wishes to remain somewhat anonymous, so they moved from Florida to someplace in the Midwest, I understand?
Nebraska, from what I understand, but that's just what they're telling me. I couldn't tell you if that's really where they're calling from. When they call me, it's no caller ID.
Okay, so she is relatively confidential still, I assume.
Correct, and wants to remain that way. That's the problem. I've probably only talked to her 3-4 times out of the whole couple of year period, and most of it is just through either emails or through a friend of mine that relays messages.
Well, there are a couple possibilities, Larry, as you know and as you mentioned at the outset. Either it is a true story that there is indeed time traveling going on in the future and that some of these individuals, including John Teeter, have come back into our time period to warn us about some events, or this may be one of the most methodically thought out hoaxes I've ever heard of, in that most hoaxes occur and they go away. This thing it seems to be well planned and well thought out as an event.
Yeah, and it's funny for me because I'm so incidental to it. I've got a full law practice and I do a whole bunch of other things, and I don't even have much time to spend on the internet to even look at it. And then when it pops up, I get all wrapped up in it again for a day or two, and then it goes away for a while, and then it comes back again.
It's
very, very interesting for me, too.
You may be the only attorney to represent a family or a time traveler from the future.
And I am very interested in the sciences and the possibility of that, so I keep going along, and hopefully I'll find out, too, someday.
You're not getting paid in $2,036, dollars, are you?
No. At least that part of it's current.
So
but again, I'm not doing a whole lot of work. That's why I don't really get that involved with it on a day-to-day basis. It's usually just some quick questions, or how do we clear this, or do you know somebody that can produce this kind of thing. So I really do very minimal work. My involvement with stuff like this and interview, and even I got interviewed for a documentary that was out that was produced last year, that takes up a lot more of the time than anything I've ever billed for, but it's been fun.
In your entire law practice career, is this got to be one of the strangest cases you've ever had?
This is the best. That's why I enjoy doing it. It's absolutely fun.
Weirder and weirder. I think what I'll do is get Oliver Williams on, who has the John Teeter website. Oliver's an expert, and get him to hear this interview and react to it, and we'll play it again on an earlier show, and we'll try to figure out just what's happening. But it is a very strange story. It's either one of the greatest hoaxes I've ever heard, where they have planned this for years, for some financial gain down the line, or John Teeter was a real time traveler. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell this weekend, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.